Hello, everyone. Welcome to Just Ging By, episode 40, for Monday, the 7th of November, 2011. My name is Craig Jones, and I'm joined, as always, by Chemslave. Hello, Chemslave.
Howdy.
How are you doing this beautiful Monday afternoon?
Beer is good.
It is indeed. It is indeed. I'm sitting here. I had a nice glass of wine with a spaghetti dinner. Very nice. And now I'm sitting here with a cup of coffee so I don't pass out towards the end of the third show, which often happens to me. So I don't have the pleasure of alcohol today. So, Chemslave, it's been a fun week in news, hasn't it?
Very fun.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we have gone to a new format the past couple weeks. I was actually not talking about that, but we'll get to it. For the last couple weeks now, we have done topical shows, putting less emphasis on individual news articles and more emphasis on the subject itself. And I think last week showed that it led to a more conversational, more wide-ranging conversation. I really liked it. Chemslave did as well. We are following that again this week. So we have a lot more show notes than we used to. We have many, many links. But unlike last week when we just threw them all up on the blog post that goes along with this show, we thought, well, you know what? That's a very big blog post. That's a very big show notes file attached to every podcast downloaded in iTunes or any other podcast client. So we thought, well, I mean, that's kind of cumbersome for the user. They're not likely to go and look at the news that way. So we've transitioned to Delicious. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Delicious is on the way out. Yahoo doesn't know what the hell to do with it. They're selling it. They're not selling it. And in fact, Chemslave, I think they did sell it. Didn't they sell it back to the founders or something?
I have no idea. I got lost after a while.
You're not the only one. You're not the only one. But anyway, so and we know, believe me, we know that this is not necessarily a permanent solution. But there are other solutions available to us. Services like Pinboard are options in the future if we need to go there. But for right now, Delicious is a very convenient way, very visually pleasing way for both Chemslave and myself when we were making the show notes and for the general public when consuming them. So we will have in our show notes that are attached to the podcast a link to the Delicious page that corresponds to our show. So check us out there. To find the show notes, go to find the show notes that will give you the link to Delicious, go to justgangbypodcast.com. So, Chemslave, it's been not just a good week for news, but it's been a very important week for news. Possibly one of the most important stories of the year is taking place in Greece. Why don't you give us a background on what's going on in Greece?
Well, it seems today the shit has hit the fan. They need a bailout. And good old George, their prime minister, George Papandreou, was like, yeah, well, I want to put this up to the vote. And then the shit really hit the fan, and they were like, the EU, it's like, you want to put it up to vote? Well, we don't have to give you any money. So they were talking about he slightly survived a confidence vote, and then a new coalition was formed, and he's out. Short telling of the story.
That's right. Yeah, he's been prime minister for over 2 years now. He actually almost predicted his own ouster by becoming prime minister, he replaced a man whose name escapes me, by the way. I haven't gone back to look who it was. But he replaced a man who was overthrown. Well, I shouldn't say overthrown, but his government fell because of discontent with the EU bailouts. Because this is not the first EU bailout that's been discussed. Greece has been bailed out at least once before. And as has been the case in Ireland and Portugal as well, those governments also fell when the citizens became disenchanted with the policies of the EU, and policies that the EU was making their governments, you know, follow in order to try and bring down the deficit. So Papandreou came into office riding that wave of discontent in Greece as well. And for 2 years, he tried to negotiate with the EU and hasn't done a great job. Greece has gone from bad to worse. And finally, he was able to get the EU to agree to another bailout. But once Germany and France, you know, put their necks on the table, you know, really, you know, put their political lives on the line for Greece, Papandreou said, oh yeah, you know what? I'm going to be a man of the people. I'm going to put this up for a popular vote. The problem with that is that 2/3 of the Greek populace does not like this bailout because of the strings attached. They don't like the austerity measures in place. They don't like having their services cut. And now they're taking it out on the government as well. There is such widespread discontent with Papandreou, even within his own party, that his ouster has been all but inevitable for the past week since he proposed that referendum. Frankly, the EU might have engineered his ouster too. There is a possibility that his replacement might be the current head of the European Central Bank. What's that smack you like?
Craziness.
What?
Craziness.
Craziness. Oh yeah, craziness. Yeah. No. Yeah. Doesn't that seem like a takeover of Greece by the EU? The European Central Bank
is. It's not a takeover.
What do you mean?
They're just slowly. They're just. It's a way to just push Greece into the right direction. They're not taking over.
Well, that's one way of doing it. But yeah, that hasn't been decided yet. By the time this airs tomorrow, well, Monday, we record all three shows for the upcoming week that previous Sunday. So now we're talking the night before this comes out. And as of right this second when Kemslave and I are recording, Papandreou is still the Prime Minister of Greece, but that's going to change come tomorrow, when he and the leader of the main opposition party decide who will replace Papandreou. And one of the candidates that has been rumored to be viable to take over that position is the Greek politician who is currently serving as head of the ECB, the European Central Bank. And obviously that's problematic because that's basically a takeover of Greece by the EU. And it's impossible to overstate just how angry Papandreou made Angela Merkel and Nicolas Sarkozy when he proposed this referendum, because their hard-fought and politically costly bailout package would have gone down in flames, which would have immediately meant the exit of Greece from the Eurozone. Not the EU, but the Eurozone, meaning they would cease to be a part of the integrated European economy, and they would go back to their old currency, the drachma. I am willing to bet that forces outside the country are as much responsible for Papandreou's fall as forces inside the country. And it's an astonishing fall. His grandfather was a long-serving and very highly regarded prime minister of Greece. And his father actually founded the political party which the son, the current Papandreou, currently heads. And both previous Papandreous are thought of very highly in Greece. Unfortunately, the current prime minister, George Papandreou, is not going to enjoy high popularity. He's really screwed things up. So it was inevitable that he would go, but it looks like the EU is taking this opportunity to try to get in somebody that they can control.
I'm wondering what will happen to other European countries as time goes by.
Well,
and if this will be a trend that will be following.
Well, I've already mentioned that this is already a trend. The Prime Minister of Ireland lost his seat in 2009, as well as the Prime Minister of Portugal. And so this is really the fourth case, because, like I said before, Greece went through another transition 2 years ago because of the same issue. So once Papandreou actually leaves office, which will be on Monday, this will be the fourth instance that a head of government has been deposed because of this this issue. And it's not going to stop, because Italy is in almost as bad shape as Greece. And Silvio Berlusconi, the, shall we say, erratic prime minister of Italy.
He's the man.
Yeah, well, and more. Yeah, he is the man in more ways than one. He is dramatically unpopular, so much so that it is almost inconceivable that he is going to finish out his full term, which ends at the end of 2013. Berlusconi is, in fact, almost as unpopular as Papandreou is, and he has just today refused an offered bailout by the European Central Bank, which will undoubtedly put him in very, very hot water with the other European nations. Now, during this past week, when Papandreou threw this whole Eurozone crisis into, like, you know, overload, there was also the G20 summit, which saw the group of 20 most industrialized nations in the world meet on the French Riviera. Now, as they were having a meeting, the G20, talking about the EU's economic troubles, Berlusconi twice falls asleep. Twice.
It's a boring talk. Nothing's going to happen of it anyway, so...
Well, that's very true. That's absolutely true. But you can't be doing that. You just can't be doing that, my God. And the other heads of state and governments saw that and were not pleased. And now added to the fact that Berlusconi now is refusing to support their actions to help get down Italy's debt. And also, given the fact that he is so drastically unpopular, Berlusconi also is likely to fall. And unlike in times past, when Berlusconi has been voted out of office, he's always retained either the leadership or some high position in his political party, or else he'd go and create his own, and always come back into office. He had a rivalry with another Italian politician by the name of Romano Prodi, and they would vacillate between leader of the opposition and prime minister ever since the mid-1990s. But this time will likely, because of Berlusconi's age, he's 76 right now, and because of just how awful the Italian economy is and how dreadfully unpopular the man is himself, it's likely that this would be the end of him politically, just as it is for Berlusconi, just as it is for the other leaders of the EU nations that have been taken out because of this this issue. So no, this is a contagion. You know,
oh, don't even use that word.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. I caught myself. I wish I hadn't said that. But I feel like I needed to explain myself now. Because they have, they being the media and the politicians in both the United States and the European Union, have been using the Greek financial crisis and making it sound like a virus or a contagion. And they were saying how everybody's so worried that it's going to be spreading to other nations. Like debt is a virus that's contracted and not a a disability which is self-inflicted. Even the use of the word contagion makes it seem like this was an inevitable you know, thing, that Greece caught a virus or something. It's not. It's obviously not true. It's also forcing...
People don't want to have any blame. They just always want to blame the other guy.
That's right. That's right. And they've done a lot of that. Ireland and Greece have both been very, very critical of the EU. Spain and Italy also. Not to as much of an extent, but also been very critical. And they don't look at their own socialist policies. Socialism is an extraordinarily difficult thing to maintain over time. It's just too expensive. You see the evidence of that all over the world. And the EU is finding that out now. Socialism is going to be what dooms the EU. And we're seeing that now. The Socialist Party is what Papandreou is the head of, by the way. And also, in other nations in Europe, socialism is the, you know, the way of doing business. It's dreadfully debilitating, dreadfully expensive. And so they get into debt, and then they keep getting loans from other nations, so they get even more into debt. It's a vicious cycle. And the only way to get out of that cycle is to default, go into bankruptcy, and reform the system. So Greece, mark my words, you know, I'm making a prediction right now that Greece is going to collapse. Greece is going to default on its debt. Absolutely. It will default. And it'll do so within the next year. And all of these hundreds of billions of dollars, it's getting close to a trillion now since the beginning of this crisis, that have been funneled into Greece will be for naught. And all that will have been accomplished from all these histrionics, 3 years of uncertainty, will be Greece had been suffering like this for 3 unnecessary years.
At least someone has a few islands out there now. Didn't they sell off a few of their islands to the highest bidder?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. By the way, that was a sham. That they didn't get any money from that.
Of course they didn't.
Oh, well. Yeah, this stuff is just so depressing.
Well, if the Euro stuff is so depressing, don't we have anything else to talk about then?
We do.
Something closer to home?
A little bit. So, Herman Cain is a dirty old man. He's raunchy. He's horny.
He's a guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know what? You know what? I'm not going to go there. Not going to go there. Anyway, moving on. Herman Cain has been accused of sexual harassment in the late 1990s when he was the head of the National Restaurant Association. By the way, National Restaurant Association, the NRA. How do you like that? He was the head of the NRA, just not the NRA that is, you know, the most famous.
So, did he actually sexually harass her? Is this just another one of those quote unquote sexual harassment cases just to get some money out of the guy.
It seems like it's the latter. Politico, a well-known and until now well-respected online political blog, released this story on Monday, I believe. No, it was Sunday evening. It was Sunday evening. Just as we got done recording last week's shows, this came out. And what they said was, pretty much, Herman Cain was accused of assaulting, not assaulting, making lewd gestures to two females under his employ. But they wouldn't say what those lewd gestures were. Not only that, they wouldn't say who it was that he did this to. They wouldn't give any details about if the case was ever settled and for how much, if it was. Basically, it was a story of nothing but questions. It was a shamefully, shamefully written blog post with no facts and no detail at all about what this man was supposed to have done. So, Herman Cain has repeatedly denied that he did anything in any way, naughty. And I believe him. I believe him just because the Politico has, for the past week, printed over 90 articles about this man. Over 90. It's probably over 100 by the time that you listen to this. And yet they have all had nothing in them. It's amazing how much text can go through one's eyes, can pass by one's eyes, and get nothing out of it. I have read almost all of those blog posts. And you know what? It's nothing. They have nothing to say. It is amazing. They put forward a story implying that he is a sexual assault person, that he's a sexual deviant. And yet they don't offer any facts. They don't offer any evidence. They don't offer any proof whatsoever to back up their assertions. They have six unnamed, unspecified sources that they say are reliable. But we don't know what happened. What we do know is that at least one woman did, go to the National Restaurant Association and complain about unwanted sexual advances by Herman Cain. There was a confidentiality agreement put in place, and the woman was paid off, and it seems like it was a relatively modest amount. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything about Herman Cain. Organizations will often give somebody what amounts to several months back pay in order to get them to leave, in order to get them not to press charges and to exit from the organization gracefully. That is not an admission of guilt. It is just the way business is done. When somebody complains about the leader of an organization and threatens to file a lawsuit, oftentimes the organization will try and pay him off.
And it's better to pay him off and then have this whole big scandal that'll cause problems for the company.
That's right.
Stocks did tumble and shit like that.
Absolutely. Well, now in this case, this wasn't a publicly traded company. This was an association. But still, I mean, you're absolutely right. So we still don't know. And now, the gag order was voluntarily lifted by the National Restaurant Association. This just, it was Wednesday or Thursday. And the women involved in this case, the one especially who filed these charges, still hasn't come forward.
And she won't. Because if she does, it'll come out that, hey, this whole thing, it's just a big attack on Herman Cain.
That's right. I really believe that. And it's been astonishing to me to see the liberal media just pick up on the story and treat it as absolute truth, that the man is a sexual, like a deviant, that he's an abuser, that he's a sexual offender. I mean, the liberal media has just latched on to this with such vigor and such relentlessness that it makes me feel sorry for the man. And I actually am very suspicious of him. It doesn't make sense that he is as high in the polls as he is. And I ventured on this podcast a few weeks ago that I thought that he was possibly even a plant by the Democrats or by the media in order to make it less likely that we'd get an actual viable candidate for president. Anyway, though, I do feel sorry for him in this instance because he is being absolutely unfairly treated. And
well, sex sells, Craig.
It does.
Be it liberal media or conservative media, anytime there's anything, absolutely anything to do with any type of sexual deviance or just sex in general, they'll latch on to it. And it'll just beat it like a dead horse because, hey, this is a taboo, but we're allowed to speak about it if it's a scandal.
Yeah.
Sort of like the vagina thing on TV now.
Oh, yeah,
we're
yeah.
We're allowed to say it now, so we can. So let's just be like a dead horse.
By the way, can you think of anything less funny or less witty than just randomly throwing out vagina?
That's testicles.
You know, that actually makes me that makes me chuckle sometimes.
You're a sick deviant.
I don't know. I just like there was a Family Guy skit that Peter Griffin went up to a grocery store like Mike and he said, "Attention customers, testicles. That is all." And you know what? That was funny. I actually like. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's funny because of the randomness of the thing.
Yeah, but exactly.
But if you keep just harping on this one word,
yeah,
that's not funny.
Although I do not think that would have worked if you said vagina. I don't think that would have worked if Peter said that. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. We have gone so far off from where we're supposed to be. It's not even funny. What were we saying? What was the point we were trying to make? Sex cells.
Sex cells.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's absolutely the case. Herman Cain is rising too quickly, and he needed to be brought down a few pegs. And so,
to repress them, peoples that are the puritanical nations of the United States, anything that anyone can attack someone on with sex is fair game.
Exactly. And by the way, the same liberal people that are harping on Herman Cain were the same people that would be singing Bill Clinton's praises as he was getting a blowjob in the Oval Office by Monica Lewinsky.
Hey, at least we knew he was a fucking man.
You know, he did lie under oath about that. There's no evidence that Herman Cain has done anything wrong.
I just don't understand why he was asked that question under oath, but let's not go into that.
Let's not. But anyway, yeah, this whole story is just rife with hypocrisy, and it is rife with unfairness towards Herman Cain himself. And he has called this a high-tech lynching. And this is the one aspect of his response that I don't like. He's been too aggressive, too defensive, and he has played the race card. Because Herman Cain, for those of you that might be in an international audience, might not be aware of who he is. He is black. He's an African American.
Yes.
I know, right? Imagine. Oh, wait. I'm trying to think. We have another African American that is somewhat prominent in American politics, don't we?
Do we?
I thought we did, But the name is escaping me at the moment.
Don't we have, like, a Supreme Court justice that's black?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking of somebody else, though. That's Clarence Thomas, by the way. But I'm thinking of somebody else. I'm trying to... Who is that that I'm... God, I can't... Oh, yeah, that's right. Barack Obama.
Ah, the Magic Negro.
Barack, the Magic Negro, lives in D.C.
Okay, we don't need to hear you singing.
The L.A. Times, they call him that. Okay, now, by the way, before any of you think that we're racist, we didn't create that name. And by the way, I probably shouldn't have sang that because that's copyrighted. So my apologies. This is a news show, and I did that for news purposes. But that was a name that a writer from the LA Times gave the president because he was just so magical. Now, yes, Herman Cain threw out the race card in a very blatant way, implying very strongly that he was being attacked because of his race, that you can't have a black Republican, you can't have a black conservative, it's just not going according to the script. And to an extent, he's right. I mean, I think he has a valid point. But he still diminished himself by throwing out the race card. I don't like it when black Democrats do it, and I don't like it when black Republicans do it. Oh, God. All right, so I think we've kind of beat him, beat this story to a pulp, I think. We have just some random little stories now across America to talk about. Bill Clinton is like syphilis. You can treat him. You can, you know, avoid him occasionally. But you know what? You just can never get rid of him. He's back. He's writing a book. Another book. He's written several books. Now he's writing another one. He's coming out next week.
Well, I have to get it then.
Oh, yeah. We have to get this one, definitely. In this book, he talks about how we can get Americans back to work and how we can get the economy going again. And he offers some praise, but also some criticism for President Obama in this book. He praises Obama for doing what was necessary to try and save the economy. And that includes TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Fund. No, protection. Program. Troubled Asset Relief Program. He also praises Obama for basically, you know, trying to work with Republicans, and the Republicans were being obstructionist and, you know, all that obvious partisan stuff that a leader in the Democrat Party would say. But he does criticize him for being so aggressive towards Wall Street, saying that Obama made it too often about us versus them, that he was attacking Wall Street executives because of their success. And he said that was destructive and that was not necessary, basically. He says it in a much more timid fashion, but that's basically what you get out of it. And that's funny. It's funny that he should say that, because Wall Street executives, a new study just today was released, saying that Wall Street executives have increased in net worth under Barack Obama. That under George W. Bush, even at the height of the economy, under his administration in 2005, they were not nearly as rich as they are now. What does that tell you? I mean, Obama has been playing the American people like a fiddle. He has made it seem like he was for the working man, the working woman. Made it seem like he, to use Bill Clinton language, really felt our pain. Was saying, you know, us 99%ers, we've got to, you know, take the money back from that 1%. But, you know, his policies are working out pretty good for that 1%. It's interesting to see.
Well, you can tell what type of person he is just by listening to the way he talks. Because once in a while, he throws in, like, a word that just seems absolutely wrong to use in that whatever sentence. But then once you pop out like your dictionary, you'll see like you'll find the meaning the meaning he was using in that sentence under like the third or fourth like definition of the word. Some definition that most people wouldn't use.
So what?
So you know he's working for the elitists. He looks down on people. He uses he loses a language that the quote unquote 99% won't actually get.
I see your point. Yes, I do see your point. But he also has an arrogance about him, even just the tone of voice he uses and the way whenever he's introduced, he jogs up onto the podium like he's a rock star. Ooh, look at me, look how cool I am. The man is full of himself. And you can tell he just does not understand why the American people don't like him anymore. He doesn't get it. He just absolutely is clueless about why he is not as popular as he once was. He got used to people telling him how special he was. He got used to people saying, "You are transformative. You are the Abraham Lincoln, FDR, JFK, and Ronald Reagan of our generation combined." He got used to that. And now that that varnish, that veneer, has been stripped away, he doesn't know what to do with himself. He is adrift. He is in the middle of an ocean with nothing but a small little paddle with no direction. He is lost. And now he is striking out at those that he supposedly is working against, the rich, the evil Wall Street executives. The thing is, they are really doing well. So, you know, it's funny. It's funny to see Obama, you know, play, you know, politics like that, because it's, it doesn't really work out so well for him if you look at the numbers, I must say. Now, he's been really capitalizing, by the way, on the Bank of America debit card fee scandal. Do you know anything about that?
Yep. Pretty much, Bank of America decided, yeah, we're going to be charging you, was it like $5 per debit card use, or was it per month? I think it was
per month.
Per month. And people,
if there is a $5 fee for every transaction, Bank of America would have been out of business the next day because nobody could have afforded that.
So $5 a month, and people said, "No, we're going to take our money out of your bank." And they retreated.
Good for them. Now, I don't mind this, actually. I think that was an unnecessary fee. And I think Bank of America would have lost a really big competitive edge. And they would have really pushed people towards other banks.
But a lot of the other banks also wanted to start do this, because there's some law that was passed not too long ago that sort of steps on there. I'm guessing how much money they can make on each transaction. So they were using this $5 a month fee to sort of get that money back.
It was stupid publicity, though. I mean, it just did not play well. And it wasn't the right climate. In a climate where people are hurting for jobs and for income, you can't just be nickel and diming us. So I actually do not have a problem with this. Although I would say that if this was so egregious to the people protesting them, move to another bank. Because that act in and of itself would spell the doom for Bank of America if enough people moved. By the way, that reminds me that we can segue into a slightly related subject. Have you heard about the transfer your money day, or move your money day, or I forget the exact wording, but there's a day coming up pretty soon that you're supposed to take your money out of banks like Bank of America and those type of banks and put them into smaller ones that are less evil.
Have not heard of it. Wouldn't do it because I already am a part of a smaller bank, so.
Well, yeah, your bank is so small, it's like microscopic compared to Bank of America. But, yeah, so that's, this whole banking industry needs to be careful, because they have been known to nickel and dime, and they have been known to, at times, take advantage of people coming to them for help. And, while I don't support Occupy Wall Street at all, I think they're just a bunch of unwashed, you know, hippie wannabes. I do, however, sympathize with some of their objectives, and the greed of banks is what got us into this mess to begin with, both in Europe and in America. And to see banks still trying to force these fees upon us is disheartening, to say the least. So in this one instance, I have very little problem with the protesters. All right, so you wanted to talk about atheism in reference to Newt Gingrich, didn't you?
Well, not really, but it seems to be. So what did he say? He said something about how you just can't trust them, because you can't trust someone to run a country who doesn't pray, because he doesn't have any fear of God or something to that effect. And it's like, really? Are you really that petty? That's just sort of close-minded.
Now, I want this. He said this during, I think it was the last CNN presidential debate. And I listened to this live. Actually, no, it wasn't live. I didn't listen to this live, but I did listen to it in context. And it wasn't as bad as it seems with the article that you provided us. He was making the point that he trusts, he can't trust atheists, because he makes the point, if you don't pray to a certain, you know,